This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is one of the, well, is the longest running guest ever on the Agribusiness Report. Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading in Chicago, has been doing this for well over 20 years. We'll talk with Bob in just a moment. Glenn Smith's a member of the board of the Farm Credit Administration, says farmers and ranchers, especially young ones, face major hurdles.
Just in the last year, we've had an increase more than double of interest rates. Our fuel expenses, our fertilizer expenses, but our land and machinery expenses are just tremendously high. And I don't think we'll be going down anytime soon. Usually those things don't go down. So they're young beginning small farmers are facing some tremendous hurdles.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. And Bob, we talked for the final time here in October. And just means we're getting towards the end of the year and harvest in full swing in many areas. Is that playing into the markets as we watch those?
It is. And for as long as I've been doing this, which, as you and I and your listeners know, been quite some time, it's the time of year where everybody's trying to time out when the bulk of their harvest is going to be done. And during that time, during which it's being harvested, obviously we're getting reports of yields, and it's been rather sporadic. I catch yield reports here, there, and throughout the day via various social media and other sources. And you know, it just kind of depends on where these guys are at, whether the owner is actually doing the cutting themselves or farming it out. And, you know, it can be kind of varied. So there's differences between the East and the West, obviously, but there's also differences even within those regions themselves. So it's just a matter of kind of getting a good feel and a good barometer of where the yield might actually end up. And that's the game that we play. We use that along with not just the yield, but just when it's going to be done and how far along they are and whether or not there could be any weather coming around the corner that could slow things down or potentially speed things up, right? So that plays into it also. But net, when you look at the seasonal tendencies, which I do quite a bit in many of the markets that have some kind of seasonality to them, this is about the time of year when we're starting to those who want to be long are starting to really try to time out when to get long the market. And it's been a bit of a seesaw these days with some kind of rally happening here and there. And then you see some of the breaks. So the market just hasn't really gotten a solid footing in terms of, in my opinion, the upswing that many look for at this time of year. So really it's just going to come down to kind of watching the harvest as it progresses, get our numbers. Latest ones will come out, or the newest ones will come out just this afternoon with the crop condition indices. And we'll see where we're at in terms of the USDA's data point in the harvest, you know, how far along we are. So we'll see how that all plays out. And as a matter of fact, speaking of the crop condition and kind of segueing on the yield situation, we're going to get this afternoon, the crop progress report is going to include the first winter wheat crop condition rating of the fall season. So it'll at least give us a report card, basically, as the USDA sees it in terms of the quality of the crop out there for the winter wheat crop. And just for a barometer, the 5-year average initial fall rating has come in usually around 52% in the good to excellent categories. So we'll see if we can get nearabouts that number. And just for context, last year wasn't so good. It was a low of around 28% in the good to excellent category. So obviously a miserable start last year, and we all know what happened with that crop. But this year, things are a little bit different, so we'll see how close we get to that longer-term fall rating average, of the initial average of 52%. So we'll get that data point. So, yeah, I mean, harvest is definitely kicking along, and they're trying to move it along as best they can. And then also we're just trying to glean what the prices are telling us in terms of the marketplace. You know, from my perch, I believe that for the most part, the market does a pretty good job of giving us an opinion as to whether or not there's ample supply or not enough supply, and that all just kind of shows up in the price. And when you look at what's happened with corn lately, we're pretty much sitting nearabouts the pricing lows, right? Sitting in about 480s. The highs recently in this longer term range that we've been have been about in the 520s, you know, maybe like the 510, something like that. So we're basically in about a 40 or 50 cent range, and the market hasn't found a new catalyst to neither break down nor rally. So I think it's just a matter of keeping an eye on, like I just said, with what's going on here in the United States and, you know, potentially any surprises that might come out in terms of yield, although I don't think there will be. I think we're pretty much in a good range-bound situation in terms of expectations for yield right now. But in terms of looking elsewhere, and especially down in South America, we'll see how things continue to evolve down there in terms of the crop getting in the ground and then any weather events that will start happening in terms of maybe affecting, you know, the ultimate yield and what kind of crop they have down there. So that's key. And then in terms of wheat, again, more of a sideways thing. It's kind of interesting that we're sitting here down towards lows in the hard red winter wheat. We're also sitting here down towards lows in the hard red spring, and then even the soft red winter, the Chicago variety, you know, also sitting down towards its lows. And then we've got all these geopolitical risks that we, you know, basically are hearing on a week in and week out basis. And you would have thought at this point that there'd be some kind of significant rally, because I think one major theme that a lot of traders of wheat, you know, beyond just the supply and demand numbers that we try to come up with, the major theme is food security. So all this potential leakage of unrest, shall we say, in the Middle East, and how that might impact those who are in that neck of the woods, thinking about procuring as much inventory as they possibly can to garner enough food security for their population. You would have thought that that would have driven the prices higher. And yet we're just kind of drifting here towards the low. So when a market has potential bullish news but doesn't act so, it certainly is something that not just in the ag markets that we talk about week on week, but also in the metals, the energies and such, when you get a catalyst that should be driving the market, at least, you know, when I say the word should, it's always, you know, something you kind of got to, you know, be careful with using, but would normally probably at least prompt some kind of pretty decent rally in the market. It just isn't doing it. That's kind of a bearish sign. So it'll be interesting to see how this thing trades over the next couple few weeks in terms of the wheat markets. And, you know, as for corn, similar story. You would have thought at this point with the pretty good rally that we had seen in energy markets, not today they're off. I mean, the energy markets were down, and I'm talking about crude and heating oil and RBOB and the natty gas markets. Crude was down almost $3 a barrel, heating oil down about 7.5 cents, and RBOB unleaded gas down about 700 points or so, which is 7 cents. The reason I bring those up is, you know, there's a strong energy component to corn, and the market had been higher, and yet we hadn't seen any huge rate, you know, rally out of these recent low prices for corn beyond the range that I mentioned at the onset here. So again, it's kind of the market was given some kind of bullish signals on some of the inputs that drive prices for our ag markets, and yet they haven't really reacted to the upside yet. So maybe we need to get farther through harvest down here. Maybe we need to see whether or not they're able to get the crop in the ground down in South America and what kind of weather they're getting at the onset there to have a better feel as to whether or not, you know, these markets can actually rotate around and hold on to some kind of gain. But the fact that we're getting some bullish news and the market's not acting that way, to my point, I think that ought to have some concern for those who are looking to get bullish or, you know, need the market to move higher to maybe price out some of their hedging that they need to do. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next couple few weeks, for sure. One other thing that's kind of interesting, and I'm just going to segue back to soybeans, has been the big diversion of prices between soy meal, which saw a significant rally in a matter of 3 or 4 weeks, bean oil, which saw a significant break over the last several months, and the soybean futures, which are basically chopping sideways. So soy meal definitely seems to be the driver, and at least in my opinion, sustaining soybean prices up here for now. But if the soy meal really starts giving up the ghost for whatever reason, it would seem to me that the path of least resistance for soybean, and even more so maybe for soy bean oil, would be lower. So it's going to be really interesting to see, again, how that all evolves in the next couple of few weeks to see if soy meal can hold on to this pretty firm rally that it's seen over the last couple of weeks or not.
Now, you talk about bullish earlier, but bearish is really the word we saw from, again, that latest cattle on feed report. Have we been able to shuck that away and get back to trading other things at this point?
I think so. So net-net, that was a surprise. no doubt about it. That number came up pretty high in terms of the placements, and that was a shocker to the market. And the market did a really quick job of discounting that information and repricing to the downside. So we saw those big moves to the downside, the gaps lower on the chart in the live cattle futures, and the continuation lower for the feeder cattle futures to the downside. But to your point, okay, so that's in the market, and yet we were able to move a little bit lower in feeder cattle after the report, but nonetheless more sideways than not. So it kind of feels like it instantly repriced down to what seems like a base of a value area, shall we say. And then for the fat cattle, if you're looking at the December, you pretty much shrugged off that weakness. The high of the gap lower day, which was Monday after the cattle on feed report, the high that day was 183.65. Today's high was 183.75. So we got 10 cents above the high that was made on the big gap down day on Friday. The reason I bring that up is, technically speaking, we basically recovered every bit of that dip. So I think the market was initially surprised by the size of the placements. There's no doubt about it. They totally got it wrong in terms of what was going on there. But nonetheless, it doesn't mean that there's going to be a vast amount of extra cattle for the year 2024. You know, this is a blip, and we'll see what happens, you know, going down the road with the next couple few cattle on feed replacements. If there's continues to be higher placements, okay, well, maybe this market needs to reprice lower and stay down here. But for right now, it seems like the market is basically shrugging that off, going, okay, we get it. We're off by this one report. Let's put it that way. But is that going to be the new trend, or is that a one-off? And it seems to me at the moment, the market's kind of treating it like a one-off. So might have been a long answer to your short question there, but that's kind of the feel that we'll see right now. And I think that, again, it's one of those bearish news things that actually the market reacts. On that day, it reacted bearishly, but it hasn't been able to sustain it. And actually, I think it's starting to move towards bullish. So, again, I think that's telling us something. We'll see if this market can push higher.
Okay. We want to talk one-on-one. How do we do it?
Sure. Pick up the phone. Give me a call. Number is 312-987-2053, or reach out via email at bmaurer, that's B-M-A-U-R-E-R, at mandikatrading.com. Or just come check out our website, and you can reach out via that too, which is www.myfuturesadvisor.com.
Bob Maurer, Manduka Trading, Chicago, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
Supporting the High Plains cotton producer is the number one priority for Plains cotton growers. Since its inception in 1956, PCG has focused on being the advocate for High Plains cotton and a respected voice on cotton issues. Protecting the interest of the High Plains cotton producer requires a dependable, dedicated organization focused on getting results, and cotton producers depend on the organization they founded, Plains Cotton Growers. From the halls of Congress to the turn rows of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduka Trading, Chicago.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton. To expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, keep up with Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, online, myfuturesadvisor.com.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
This is the Agribusiness Report.
Nature is obviously continuing to play a very heavy impact on producer decisions.
USDA livestock analyst Chael Shagham's comments after studying Friday's surprising cattle on feed report showing more cattle than expected being placed into feedlots during September, fewer marketings of fed cattle, winding up with a surprisingly large feedlot inventory October 1st, 11.6 million head. That would be 1% more than a year ago.
And would be the second highest October 1st inventory number since the series began in 1996.
As to his comment about the impact of nature, Shagham says large areas of the nation are still in drought, forage supplies very short, also some serious worry about
availability of water in parts of the country in terms of, you know, stock tanks and ponds are in parts of the country also very, very low.
Prices for feeders very, very high, so off they go to feedlots. Gary Crawford, Washington.